yeah, I feel like he's the right guy. I'm not sure how Bucks can help us win contested ball on the weekend.
And we've seen some edits today where we're actually going against what we stand for as a side, and I feel like we're pretty united in how we want to play and our understanding of it. We're just not executing, getting beaten around the footy, so we just want to address that. For us, we just need to get cracking, get to work. There's none of these questions asked after round two when we had a good win.
I don't think it's make or break. We obviously want to win. I think the main one's just around our contested ball. And that's just not within the stoppage, that's forward and behind the ball as well. So, we need to fix those issues. I don't think it's ever good to just gift games to young kids either. I don't think that really helps. We've got some great kids. It's just making sure we bleed them through the side at the right stage.
No gifting, says the skipper, Scott Pendlebury from the Magpies. They are certainly front and centre in the news cycle at the moment. A bit of contest action they need to fix up as well. Some things in the review they didn't quite like. They are certainly top of the agenda in the world of footy at the moment. Johnny Ralph basically runs the agenda in footy from the Herald Sun. He's the buzz. You can catch him on Fox Footy doing great things as well. Ralphie, good morning.
Hello, boys. Hey, you found another one in Brad Crouch, haven't you? Inside and the honesty and all the things you want in those kind of player interviews. He's wasn't sure what to think of him when he came across on Reasonable Money, but he fronted up on the weekend, and he certainly fronted up just then. He's been a cracker.
Yeah, we're very happy with Crouchy, and it's about integrating them into your world and making them part of the system rather than just the person on the other side of the microphone. And he's bought into that beautifully, which we love from our Inner Sanctum boys through the AFL season, Ralphie. Tell us about the Magpies, though. They are under enormous pressure. Nathan Buckley is out of contract at the end of the season. He's got a decision to make about how young he goes. Is the season over? Are they building towards the next flag, or are they trying to survive and cling on for this one?
You know what? I think all those things are really valid. I always go back to, coaches and when they're struggling. You know, are their best players playing well? And as Dennis Pagan always said, you're a champion coach if you've got champion players who are fronting up. I just look at Jordan Ngoi, and I think he's a massive part of the solution, but he's also a massive part of the problem. You know, I hear it is plain and simple. He's the most overrated player in the competition right now. You know, you look at all of those players on $800,000 for Collingwood. You know, Brodie Grundy and Darcy Moore and Pendlebury and Howe. You know, they're all playing solid football, and if, you know, Grundy hasn't played as well as he might like to in the last couple of weeks, you know, he's a dual All-Australian and he's a dual Best and Fairest winner. I mean, I just keep looking at, you know, players out there like Jake Stringer or players there like there for nearly the best part of a decade in Dustin Martin. Losing weight, getting fit, getting stripped, getting lean, getting hungry. And this bloke is according to Champion Data, he's an average player right now. And I think that's all he is. He's got two coaches' votes out of a possible 40. So, yes, I know they need to go younger and they'll play Finlay McRae this weekend. You know, they'll consider Mark Keane and maybe whether they should throw someone like Darcy Moore forward. But if your best players aren't playing well, all that comes back to the coach and the focus on the coach and whether the players love the coach. So, look, he's one of the elements of it. He's just got to play better and he's got to do everything possible to get fit. And I'm just not sure that he's cut fit like so many players across the competition, including his captain, Scott Pendlebury.
Ralphie, there's been a lot of commentary about Nathan Buckley and Collingwood in the last 24 hours, and that was always going to happen. It was quite predictable, and that's fair enough because it is Collingwood and they're 1-3. What's your inside word on Nathan and the players, and are they all still behind him as they have been? What's your view on that?
Oh, I think they hit a sweet spot, didn't they, for a couple of years through that 2018-19 period. I mean, every coach had some paint stripped off them in terms of their relationships, in terms of what happened in the hub. I suppose the one issue for me that's still unexplainable is that COVID breach for Nathan Buckley, you know, in the middle of 2020, and, you know, the exact circumstances of that and whether the players, you know, really felt like they were frustrated by the fact that, you know, it just interrupted their season again and, look, he had to go into quarantine if only for 24 hours. So, look, I think there were some players there who were less than thrilled with exactly what happened in that circumstance. But what we also have to say is that Steele Sidebottom, who was a Collingwood vice-captain, you know, committed an even more egregious breach. And so, look, I think if you're a Collingwood player, it's the same as the salary cap drama. You know, there's a way in which you're thinking, OK, well, I've just lost my best mates and I'm not really happy about this. But if I was a Collingwood player, I'd be thinking to myself, I need to perform right now because we've actually seen what happens. If you don't perform, they get rid of you. And so I think it's a double-edged sword. Yes, you can be upset about it. Yes, you can be upset about Nathan Buckley and that COVID breach. But at the end of the day, a lot of these players are getting paid extraordinary money, and it's just beholden upon them to perform and potentially to perform against West Coast. Otherwise, they'll be out of the side.
I'm reading between the lines here, Buzz, from what you're saying. Are you suggesting that the players have gone cold on Nathan Buckley?
No, I just think in that specific circumstance, some of those players were were potentially frustrated that Buckley would commit what was a pretty obvious breach there, whether it was playing tennis or whatever that circumstance was. So, look, Tom Morris has talked about that, and he said that some of the senior players, the likes of Brody Grundy and Jordan Ruff had that honest conversation. Now, I'm not aware of that. So I'm not here saying that Collingwood players are going cold on him. He's always had the biggest defender of all time in Scotty Penderbury, and Scotty loves what Nathan does. He works hard. He rolls his sleeves up. He tries to get the best out of himself. I don't think the Collingwood issue right now is a relationship thing. It's just they've potentially picked the wrong side. They've definitely stripped a lot of depth, which they haven't replaced right now. And the kids they'd love to bring in, like Caleb Poulter and Reece McGuinness and Mark Keane and Will Kelly, a few of those guys have just had interrupted pre-seasons that just haven't allowed them to be in the side right now. They played Ollie Henry in round one. He was on the downswing of his form. He had four positions. They've got to play him in the twos. Now, you can say they must play all the kids, but if they played Ollie Henry and he had a possessionless game, they might set him back 6 weeks. I think in 4 weeks they'll be playing better. Hopefully they're getting more out of Brody Grundy, whether it's physicality or contested marking or goals. What's plan B for you, Brody? But I also think we'll be seeing the likes of Mark Keane and I think they'll be experimenting. I mean, what better chance for them to throw a player forward of the calibre of Darcy Moore? He kicked 24 and 24 goals in his 25 goals in his first 2 years. They're crying out for some sort of spark there. And at least throw him forward to see that if it's not by the end of the year that forward line doesn't get it done with him, then you say, OK, well, maybe Mychek's on the table or maybe Mason Cox is on the table. Those blokes have done well for them in finals, but there's a lot of games in which Mason Cox just doesn't get it done for the Collingwood forward line, and the entire forward line almost has to run through him, given he's the tallest player in football.
We're going to have Rocket on after 8 o'clock. We'll ask him about that, about what Nathan Buckley might need to do with the players he's got at his disposal to be able to turn things around. The last thing I'll say on the Collingwood situation is, and I read your article last night, and I do tend to agree with you. It's only 4 games ago that they had the famous victory against West Coast in Perth, against the odds. Played a really positive brand of football, and then obviously the off-season stuff has just added to the story about if Collingwood starts the year poorly, then there's going to be a pile-on. And it is that is the story. So I can understand where we are, but as you also say, it could be all very different in 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that too is, as I said there, the old Dennis Pagan. I always come back to Dennis Pagan.
You love
Don't
Dennis.
Don't tickle down my back and tell me it's raining. If Nathan Buckley had just said, and not Ned Guy, not Mark Anderson, not Jeff Walsh, if he controlled the narrative through that offseason and said, guys, we pushed as hard as we could for a flag, we're $1 million over, we need to move players on. None of the nonsense about, Jaden Stevenson's off-field, none of the nonsense about, do senior players like Adam Treloar. Just tell people plain and simple. I think Collingwood fans are really smart, and I think they feel like they've been bulltish to right now.
Bulltish. In fairness, that's not his job to tell that story. It's the list manager's job or the CEO or president.
Yeah, but the list manager was no good at telling that story. And Mark Anderson.
But he could have been. If he told it like you told it, he would have been fine.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's one of those things, isn't it? So the Magpies are in the news always. So we'll see what happens with them. Important game against West Coast this week. That's why you can't play Darcy Moore down forward, because he's got a hands full down back with the big forwards of the West Coast Eagles. So we'll work on that. What about the MRO this week? How do you go, Michael Christian? I reckon he's doing generally a very good job. How do you go this week?
Well, I think he's doing a really good job. And I don't necessarily agree with the Ben Cunnington decision on Rory Laird. For those that haven't seen, he went past the ball and it maybe jumped a little bit off the ground. Laird went off the ground and had, at least some medical assistance and then came back on. What I do love about what Michael Christian's going to do is he's going to elevate the force if he sees that a player gets bumped in the head or line ball. He did it with Zach Williams on Hunter Clark. He definitely did it with Paddy Dangerfield with Jake Kelly. And he did it with Caleb Daniel, where he saw the player in Berry had not been concussed, but he still said, I don't like that action, and so I'm going to report it. I'm going to elevate elevate it, given the capacity to cause serious injury. And so, look, I know that North will take it to the tribunal. I think they'll probably get off, but I would love someone who is prepared to protect the players when everything the AFL is talking about is, preventing concussions, trying to protect players in terms of the duty of care. And so, if he'd let him off, well, the next one where the player just gets hurt, we reference Kit Ben Cunnington and we say that, well, there's the precedent. So I like what he's doing, even if he does see this get overturned at the tribunal.
But what I'm a bit confused about, and I looked at it a number of times, and I don't have the same amount of angles that Crusoe has, did he hit him in the head?
I think he makes incidental contact to the head. But again, yeah, he's most of it to the shoulder, and I'm sure that's the charge they land for today.
See, to me, it was a very cut-and-dried situation that Ben Cunnington bumped Roy Laird late. It was a silly thing to do. It was a 50-metre penalty, move on. I don't think it was anything other than that. And I know that we have to condition ourselves in we're living in a different world now, but wasn't that just a blatant, just late hit as opposed to a high hit and not really with any great force either?
Well, that's what I must admit I was a bit surprised about, Buzz, that he elevated it to medium straight away rather than just making it to low, because it's probably one of those hits, it's a free kick, so therefore it's not a reportable offence. It's been elevated from free kick to above low, straight to medium on the back of really no contact with anything.
This is the thing.
He'll go and fight it and challenge it, and that's fine. That's the system. You're entitled to go and fight it and challenge it. So in the grand scheme of things, depending on the outcome, if it's a if he gets off, it actually doesn't matter. It's just an inconvenience for North Melbourne to have to go through it. But the point is made by Ralphie, and I think that's a good one, that what clearly is happening from the MRO's perspective is that any of these actions that we don't want to see in the game, they will be escalated and elevated, so the player has to answer for it, suspension or not.
Yeah, and the quirk of this is that instead of getting a $2,000 fine for a low impact incident, he goes to the tribunal, he gets off, he doesn't have to pay a fine at all. Look, I think the one thing with Crusoe as well, and it was shown on the footy shows last night, that Harbrow-Gibbons incident where Harbrow goes in, you know, he could collect the ball but runs past it. You know, Crusoe decided that both players were going for the ball. I think anyone who'd watched a lot of football would know that Harbrow wasn't going for the ball, he was going to earn it. And so if Crusoe's going to be, you know, we're going to judge Crusoe, he's got to be consistent. And I didn't think he was consistent in that instance.
I disagree with that. I think he got that absolutely right.
I agree.
Harbrow was playing, made a play at the ball, ended up staying a bit tall so he couldn't get it, and then turned to protect himself from contact.
But you have to look after yourself. Correct. As well. And yeah. that to me, that was textbook, I'm going to try and win a hard ball and I'm going to turn my body to protect myself. You still have to be able to do that, because I get worried about two things. I get worried about concussion, and I understand that from a high bump. But I also get concerned and worried about players that don't have the right technique trying to pick up a loose ball on the ground, where they go head first and they could give themselves all sorts of damage because they're not protecting themselves trying to pick up the football.
Yeah, that all might be right. But you said that he was making a play on the ball half.
He absolutely was.
The ball was there, he could have picked it up. I mean, we saw with Ben Long, he got suspended last year on Dylan Scheel. The ball was right there. He hadn't really even stepped over it, but he decided, I'm not going to pick it up. Now, I agree that they're split-second incidents.
They're very different
scenarios. If you're making a play on the ball, just bend down and pick up the ball.
Yeah, well, he should have, but he didn't get low enough. His hands were down to pick up the ball, and he worked out he wasn't going to get it, so he turned to brace. And he's entitled to do that to protect himself. I've got no problem. And the relevance, the conversation where they were comparing that incident to the Ben Cunnington incident, they're totally different. One's making a play on the ball, one's coming and hitting you late. So you can't compare those. They are very different incidents. And this is why the frustration is from the fans, that we keep talking about incidents that are very, very different as the same incident. And it's not...
It was a completely different action.
Yeah.
Harbrow is...
I'll show you again, too, that the best and fairest for the Brownlow is totally ridiculous now. You know, I mean, players are just going to get suspended, as Patrick Dangerfield did a couple of weeks back, for football incidents where they're a split second late. And I understand that, you know, I think it's been fantastic to have that rule in. But, you know, there are players now who should win the Brownlow who won't, because they were, you know, going to pick up the ball and missed it by 30 centimetres, and all of a sudden they're suspended.
What happened to Glenn Bartlett, Buzz?
I think when he came out, as he did in August last year, and said that we don't hand out Melbourne jumpers in a Wheaties packet, I think he upset a lot of people. But you know what? That's what Jeff Kennett has done as a president for many years, and also, of course, as the Premier of Premier of the state. So I think he upset a lot of people there. But I spoke to Glenn Bartlett yesterday, and Glenn is absolutely adamant. He said, I was not pushed. I did not get forced out. In fact, I was actually extended by the board for the next 12 months, and I was thinking about going on. And then as he said to me, I was sitting there in round three at the Manuka game. He had decided to stay back. He's got four boys. He's got three businesses. He's got a fiancée, but he's been too busy to marry for the last 4 years. And he said, my son said to me, hey, guys, we haven't done this for 8 years, just sitting on the couch having a couple of furfies. And in Glenn's words, he said, I broke down in tears and I said, I've got my priorities wrong. You know, he's got a Riversdale golf membership, which he hasn't, you know, played with his sons for 8 years. You know, he's got a Margaret River estate there, which he hasn't been able to get back to. And so, look, I've got no doubt that he put noses out of joint, that his coach was upset. There's probably people on the board that don't like the way he does business. But all I can do is go on what Glenn said. And he said, I was not pushed. And in fact, you know, I was the one that drove the change. I was the one that had got Kate Roffey on the board 8 years ago. And it's the perfect time for me to hand over. So whether we believe that or not, I think he's done an outstanding job. And they won 9 out of 12 games. After he said they were insipid and disgraceful and all those terrible words that he instilled upon his football club.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, Ralphie, because we had Max Gawn in here talking about this, and he's adamant that the players were very comfortable with what Glenn Bartlett said at the time because he was right. And in a lot of ways, it did shake up the place. Interesting. Interesting.
Now, and I think, too, that that there are, if you're a president, do you want to be a yes man or, do you want to be someone who doesn't rock the boat?
You've got to be strong. You want someone to be a strong leader.
Yeah, he says he's a values-driven leader, which means that you need to instigate change, which means you need to push people, which means that, you know, when someone's tapping away at their laptop, you're over their shoulder, what are you doing? Can we be better? This is it. No club more in the history of AFL football needed change than this football club in 2013. And Peter Jackson and Glenn Bartlett got it done. And they're not always cut any of us cup of tea. They're really hard leaders. But I think they both did an outstanding job.
So that's Glenn Bartlett with Eddie Maguire and Colin Carter stepping down from the Cats as well. That's three of the 18 that won't be there in season 2022, Buzz. Is this the impact of COVID? Is it pressure of the game? Or is it just time for these guys?
No, Eddie Maguire as well. And look, I think, I'm not sure about Colin Carter. His term was up. But I think the other three were absolutely drained. As Glenn Bartlett said, you know, those monthly board meetings became weekly board meetings where you're battling for the survival of your football club. I really worry about these COVID cuts. And I really worry about the extraordinary drain on so many people last year, which has turned into them doing more and more hours. As Sam Landsberger told us, you know, these senior coaches doing 100 hours, these assistant coaches, who so many of them now are contemplating their exit from the game. You know, they are just, there's no days off. You know, they're coding as they always were. They have as many players who need the extra fitness work, who need them, who demand that they come in on the days off. And I think a lot of them are saying, it's just not worth it. So if I'm Gillon McLachlan, yes, I'm worried about Tasmania. Yes, I'm worried about COVID. But I am, as quick as I can, reversing some of those COVID cuts. Because too many people in the industry are absolutely drained 4 weeks into a very long season. I'm going to ask you, you've lived it. You've lived it with a limited budget for the AFLW. You know, I know it's not comparing apples and apples, but, you know, there are people that just say after a while, after all the privilege and glory of working at an AFLW club or an AFL club, it's just not worth it. Can you see that experience?
It's the most draining of my 4 years in the AFLW this year with the budget cuts and the extra load that you have to take on across the board, without a doubt. So even just that small sample size in my world, I can imagine how it is impacting the men's competition as well. Buzz, you've been excellent today. Really appreciated your energy, your insight and your aggression. Well done.
Thank you very much.